Good morning, podcast fans, and welcome back to the Mike Blog Bible Reading Podcast. This morning we are in Genesis chapter 38, and I have to say before we start this, that this is a little bit of a departure from what we read yesterday, which was the beginning of the story of Joseph. Today, we are reading something about Joseph's older brother, Judah, who was, of course, one of the sons of Jacob, and there is an Israelite tribe named after him. So this story is a little bit off the wall in that it is not related to the events of the larger narrative that was started yesterday. However, there is a point to it because there's a point to everything in the Bible. So let's go ahead and jump into it. Genesis chapter 38, New American Standard Bible, verse 1. And it came about at that time that Judah departed from his brothers and visited a certain Adullamite whose name was Hira. So this is the at that time that they're referring to is directly after the time where they sold Joseph, their younger brother, off to slave traders. Verse 2, Judah saw there a daughter of a certain Canaanite whose name was Shua, and he took her and went into her, which is, a euphemism, as I'm sure you understand. So she conceived and bore a son, and he named him Then she conceived again and bore a son and named him Onan. So he made this woman her wife, or his wife. She bore still another son and named him Shelah, and it was at Chezeb that she bore him. Now Judah took a wife for his firstborn, and her name was Tamar. So all of this that we've read, this is all preface for this marriage between and Tamar. This is a thing that's going to matter for the rest of the chapter. But Judah's firstborn, was evil in the sight of the Lord, so the Lord took his life. Now, this is something that I wonder about. So it says here, it's pretty clear language, that Judah's firstborn, was evil, so the Lord took him out, right? That much is pretty plain. However, looking at what Judah does, I'd have to say that Judah was not exactly an upstanding citizen himself. Yes, he was part of the biblical promise, and God had special grace for him because of the promise that he had made to, you know, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But as bad as Judah was, how bad did have to be for God to actually take him out? That's an interesting question to me. Anyway, moving on. Verse 8, then Judah said to Onan, go into your brother's wife and perform your duty as a brother-in-law to her and raise up offspring for your brother. So the deal there is that at that time, in order for the family name to continue, they had to have male offspring. They had to have sons. And it was to the sons that the goods of the household would be passed down. So if this widow does not have sons that can inherit the goods of the household, then she has nothing. There's no legacy. There's no continued household for that. She just becomes a widow and has to live as, you know, in some ways a parasitical life attached to somebody else's household. So the way they dealt with that at that time was if a husband died, that the brother of that husband would go and, quote, do his duty and have a son by the widow so that there would be the name could carry on through that son. So even though the son wasn't the offspring of the deceased man, it would be reckoned as the offspring of the deceased man so that the name of the family could continue. So that's the reason for this pairing up there. Verse 9, Onan knew that the offspring would not be his. So when he went into his brother's wife, he wasted his seed on the ground in order not to give the offspring to his brother. So clearly these two, he was not much different from his brother, I guess. But what he did was displeasing in the sight of the Lord, so he took his life also. Again, how bad did Onan have to be that the Lord would do this? That seems pretty interesting to me as a question. Verse 11, then Judah said to his daughter-in-law Tamar, remain a widow in your father's house until my son Shelah grows up, for he thought, I am afraid that he too may die like his brothers. So Tamar went and lived at her father's house. Now remember, we've talked about before how they would give a bride price to the family of the bride, and this is exactly what that was for. In the case that a widow needed to go back to her father's house, that house was given riches in order to continue to support her. Okay, now verse 12. Now after a considerable time, Shua's daughter, the wife of Judah, died. This was the Canaanite woman that he married and had these three sons with. And when the time of mourning was ended, Judah went up to his sheep shearers at Timnah, he and his friend Hira the Adullamite. So he says, okay, I'm done mourning. I'm going to go get some work done. It was told to Tamar, behold, your father-in-law is going up to Timnah to shear his sheep. So she removed her widow's garments and covered herself with a veil and wrapped herself and sat in the gateway of Enaim, which is on the road to Timnah. For she saw that Shelah had grown up and she had not been given to him as a wife. So she's going, hey, there was an arrangement made and he's not keeping up his end of the bargain. So she is about to do something that is really, really strange. And I think the extreme nature of what she is about to do kind of explains just how important it was in those days to have a son, to have offspring. So keep that in mind as we read through the rest of this. verse 15, when Judah saw her, he thought she was a harlot, for she had covered her face. Apparently that's how they identified themselves in those days. So he turned aside to her by the road and said, here now, let me come into you, for he did not know that she was his daughter-in-law. And she said, what will you give me that you may come into me? He said, therefore, I will send you a young goat from the flock. She said, moreover, will you give me a pledge until you send it? He said, what pledge shall I give you? And she said, your seal and your cord and your staff that is in your hand. So he gave them to her and went into her, and she conceived by him. So there's lots of euphemisms flying around there, and I'm sure all of you know exactly what they're talking about here. What I want to point out is that these things that she asks for as collateral until he sends the payment that they had agreed on were things that would be specifically identified as his. So if she wanted to, you know, go out in public and say, this person never paid me for services rendered, she could bring out these objects and they would be identifiable as his objects. And then the public would know, oh, that Judah guy, he's untrustworthy, et cetera, et cetera. verse 19, then she arose and departed, removed her veil and put on her widow's garments. So she has disguised herself to look like a hooker. Which meant a different thing in those, looking like a hooker meant a different thing in those days, apparently, went and did this deed with her father-in-law, gets a son, comes back, and pretends the whole thing never happened, which is going to result in a confrontation later. Verse 20, when Judah sent the young goat by his friend, the Adullamite, to receive the pledge from the woman's hand, he did not find her. So Judah now wants to get back his stuff. So he sends back the goat to, you know, this prostitute that he doesn't realize is his own daughter-in-law, and she's not there anymore. Oh, this is a problem. So he returned to Judah and said, I did not find her. And furthermore, the men of the place, I'm sorry, I skipped a little thing here. All right, verse 20. When Judah sent the young goat by his friend, the Adullamite, to receive the pledge from the woman's hand, he did not find her. He asked the men of the place, saying, where is the temple prostitute who was by the road at Enaim? But they said, there has been no temple prostitute here. So a temple prostitute was somebody who worked for the temple, and it was considered worship of that particular god of that, you know, temple, that idol, to pay to have relations with that prostitute, and that was how they funded the temple, and that was how they attracted worshipers. It's a pretty transparent system. Anyway, so there had to have been a temple there. They would have known, you know, what was going on. This would have been a normal thing, and people would have understood it. It's not like it's a thing today that's illegal in many areas. This would have been something that was very open and publicly, well, I mean, the act itself wouldn't have been publicly done, but the knowledge of what was going on was not secret or hidden or shameful knowledge to the people there. So they would have talked about it. Anyway, so he returned to Judah and said, I did not find her. Furthermore, the men of that place said, there has been no temple prostitute here. Then Judah said, let her keep them. Otherwise, we will become a laughingstock. After all, I sent this young goat, but you did not find her. So Judah's saying, well. I mean, we tried to pay for services, but she wasn't there anymore. So, you know, whatever, this is not going to be a problem for us. It's her fault anyway that she didn't get what she was supposed to be paid. Now, 24. Now, it was 3 months later that Judah was informed, your daughter-in-law Tamar has played the harlot, and behold, she is also with child by harlotry. Then Judah said, bring her out and let her be burned. Okay, so this is interesting. Judah himself engages in the paying of prostitutes for certain services, and yet when someone tells him secondhand that his daughter-in-law has been engaging in the same activity, he comes out with all of this judgment. Verse 25, it was while she was being brought out that she sent to her father-in-law saying, I am with child by the man to whom these things belong. And she said, please examine and see whose signet ring and cords and staff are these. Aha! The plan comes to fruition. Judah recognized them and said, she is more righteous than I, inasmuch as I did not give her my son Shelah, and he did not have relations with her again. Well, that would be even creepier than it had already gotten, I think. Anyway, so she gets herself out of being burned to death by proving that it was him, in fact, with whom she played the harlot, and that it was his refusal to fulfill her agreement, the agreement that they had together, that was the reasoning behind this. So she basically throws his own bad actions back in his face. Moreover, it took place while she was giving birth. One put out a hand, this would be one of the children, and the midwife took and tied a scarlet thread on his hand, saying this one came out first. Now, this was a big deal because it was, you know, there were lots of privileges to being the elder son. I'm sorry. I skipped a verse there. It came about at the time she was giving birth that, behold, there were twins in her womb. Moreover, it took place while she was giving birth. One put out a hand, and the midwife took and tied a scarlet thread on his hand, saying, this one came out first. See, there it is. That's the thing that I forgot. That makes it all make sense. So, again, as I was trying to explain before I cut myself off because I skipped something, it was important to know which one was the firstborn in the case of twins, because they had special privileges. Verse 29, but it came about as he drew back his hand that, behold, his brother came out. Then she said, what a breach you have made for yourself. So he was named Perez, which means breach. Afterwards, his brother came out, who had the scarlet thread on his hand, and he was named Zerah, which means dawning or brightness. So, all taken together, what we have here is a pretty crazy story that, you know, would be perfectly at home in any soap opera. And again, I said when we started here that what's the point of this chapter? Because it kind of, you know, is a big gear shift away from talking about Joseph. Again, I think the point of this chapter is to illustrate the kind of people that God works with sometimes. So Judah is the father of a tribe of the nation of Israel, yet he is engaged in harlotry and pagan idolatry and is in general a dishonest and murderous person because it was going to be his idea to kill his brother. And, you know, he backed away from murder and instead went with slave trading, which is not really any better. So this is the kind of person, this is the kind of really garbage person from whom God is raising his people. Now, the whole point here is to show not what good people the Jews are, not what a good person Judah is, because obviously he's not. And obviously the Jews are sinful people just like everybody else. The point of here, the point of what's going on here is to show what God can do with such people. It's to show what God can make out of such rough materials to start with. You know, it's been said that, you know, you can tell, you know, how great an artist is by what he can make out of common ingredients. Well, you know, you can't get much rougher than Joseph's brothers and specifically Judah here. So, all that being said, I think that's the point, is to show what God does with really, really, really unsaved people. So, all that being said, I think I've talked plenty this morning. So I'm going to go ahead and sign off here. This has been the Mike Blog Bible Reading Podcast. I have been Mike, and I will see you all tomorrow.